You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I have to sit at the table all pissed off and eat my Christmas dinner. I was very, very happy.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
And we're funny like these guys. I also appreciate the fact that you saved the best for first on these team previews. Appreciate that.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I mean, it has nothing to do with the fact that Arizona is first in alphabetical order.
No, of course not. It's because you wanted me first. I get it. Put your best foot forward. That's what they say. Yes.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to episode 177 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Scott Bogman from the In This League Fantasy Podcast Network. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Justin. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Just kind of enjoying the almost new year. We're recording this about, a couple days before New Year's. How was your holiday season?
It was good. I'm, glad that it's over. Of course, huge Steelers fan. So I was holding up Christmas dinner watching the game and came away. I didn't have to sit at the table all pissed off and eat my Christmas dinner. I was very, very happy. So glad that the Steelers won and also glad that Christmas is over. New Year's is almost here and all that stuff will be over with. And back to work. Back to baseball, right?
Back to baseball. We are kicking off the new year with just a ton of baseball content, and this is the first team preview that we're doing, so I had to have my buddy Scott Bogman from ITL come on and talk about his team, the Arizona Diamondbacks. But before we do, Scott, tell people where you can be reached on Twitter and then what you guys do over at ITL, because you guys do a ton of podcasting.
Yes, we really do. You can find me on Twitter. It's at Bogman Sports, BOGMAN. And inthisleague.com is our website where we have all kinds of podcasts for you. We have baseball. We have football. We have basketball. We have hockey. We have college football. And we have two brand new shows. We have Prospect One, which is a minor league baseball podcast that the Welsh is putting out. And we have In This War Room, which is what I'm doing, which is all on the NFL draft. It's with a fantasy slant. So we've got all those shows. The Welsh and I are on all of them except the college fantasy football one. That's myself, Blake, and Blaze. And the hockey one is our guys, Tony and Brian. So we've got all kinds of stuff going on over there if you guys want to check us out. And, we're funny like these guys. I also appreciate the fact that you saved the best for first on these team previews. Appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it has nothing to do with the fact that Arizona is first in alphabetical order.
No, of course not. It's because you wanted me first. I get it. Put your best foot forward. That's what they say. Yes.
Exactly. Start off with a bang.
Right. Right.
But you definitely go check Scott and Chris out at inthisleague.com. Like you said, a ton of different kinds of podcasts. They cover pretty much everything you'd ever want out of fantasy sports. So, and one of, probably the best produced podcast in all of fantasy sports. I love what you guys do over there, and that's why we always have you guys back on every season and multiple times throughout the season.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you very much.
And what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about your team, the Arizona Diamondbacks. So we'll jump right in. Let's start with some of the infielders. And at catcher, you guys have you guys signed Jeff Mathis. He's probably going to play about 60 games a year behind the plate there. You also have Chris Herman. What are your thoughts? Either of these guys fantasy relevant for you?
Probably not. I mean, you know, Jeff Mathis was brought in, you know, first you kind of have to talk about the massive changes that happened with the Diamondbacks over the offseason. You know, the front office changed. Mike Hazen is in. Dave Stewart is out. We got rid of Chip Hale and Troy Lavolo comes in. So I think a lot of these positions on the Diamondbacks are going to be up to what Torrey decides. And, you know, for the first time ever, the Diamondbacks have an analytical department that is super deep. And I think that's really why Jeff Mathis was brought in, was for his pitch framing. I think Chris Herman, you know, coming off the surgery, I think he's going to be probably, you know, I just can't tell. I would feel like Chris Herman would be the main catcher. But they really like Jeff Mathis' pitch framing. And, you know, speaking of analytics, that's kind of one of the reasons he was brought in. The pitching staff needs all the help it could possibly get. So you might see Jeff Mathis back there. I don't think that I'm drafting either one of these guys in standard leagues. If I had to pick one for a fantasy team, it would be Chris Herman. But we don't know how many games he's going to play and what it's going to look like behind the plate. So I don't think I'm very comfortable with either one of these guys.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable with either one at all. So I agree with you there. In terms of their fantasy value, but I think what you bring up is a really good point. And the reason I'm interested in Jeff Mathis isn't for his offense, because we know his offense isn't going to be very good. I mean, guy, you know, probably will hit, you know, a barely above or right around the Mendoza line throughout the season. It's his pitch framing and it's his defensive abilities and what they can do for your guys' starting pitching staff. So if he becomes personal catcher to certain guys, and we know that before draft season, that is going to just, you know, add a little check mark next to their name for me on draft day, especially if he's with a Robbie Ray or a Taijuan Walker or a Zach Greinke, because I feel like he would give an added boost to those guys with his framing ability.
They're keeping an eye on Matt Wieters, too. Mm. I don't know if that's going to come to fruition, because I think if you're going to sign Wieters, maybe you would assign Wellington Castillo, because he has the knowledge of all the pitching staff and everything, but they might not have liked what he does behind the plate. But it's something that they're keeping an eye on, because he's a free agent. No one signed him yet. So, I mean, if Matt Wieters comes in, it throws a wrench into everything, because he would definitely be the main catcher.
Yeah, and he's not a very good defensive catcher and good pitch framer. So, like, he's not a guy that, to me, would help the pitching staff. He'd be an interesting fit offensively.
Right.
I wonder, you know, considering, you know, the Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago, how much DH he played anyways, you know, the last season, how much he would really, or how much he would benefit from coming to a National League team as opposed to going to an American League team. So, but like you said, he's still on the market. So, and there are a couple of guys still on the market. You know, we still haven't had Mark Trumbo or Chris Carter sign. Not that they're, you know, in Arizona's wheelhouse with Paul Goldschmidt, who we'll talk about next, but a lot of things could change, you know, before the start of the season in terms of some of these teams and players. Let's talk about Paul Goldschmidt. You know, he was my number one overall player last year coming into drafts. You know, he wasn't as great as I thought he necessarily would be, but he didn't disappoint at all. He wasn't a bust by any stretch of the imagination. Where are you taking him in drafts this year?
He's still middle of the first round guy, you know, probably a top six pick. You know, his power was disappointing last year, like you said, 24 homers coming off a 33 homer season. He had the 32 stolen bases, though, and that was the big thing. Everyone thought, yeah, well, he stole 21 the year before. Is he really going to match that? And he bumped it up, you know, almost a third more production in stolen bases there, when stolen bases are coming at a premium. So they're tougher to come by. And this roster, I mean, everything that could go wrong for the Diamondbacks went wrong last year outside of Goldie stayed healthy and played 158 games. And Yasmani Tomas was healthy for most of the year. So outside of that, everyone either super underperformed or was hurt. So he's one of the very few good spots in the lineup. But the reason I bring that up, for him is because he's going to have Jake Lamb, hopefully, for the whole season. He's going to have AJ Pollock for, you know, I mean, he's kind of injury prone at this point, but hopefully he starts out and plays for the majority of the season. He's going to have better bats in this lineup around him to do more things. So he could see a couple more better pitches, and, you know, all he would need would be 9 better pitches that he can hit out to match his home run production from the year before in 2015. So I think that he's still a very, very high pick, MVP, perennial MVP candidate.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I have no problem taking him early. I've been a big proponent that first base is not as deep, especially at the upper levels, than it has been in years past. I definitely want to get a first baseman out of my first 4 or 5 picks, because I don't like a lot of kind of the bargain bin guys, especially in deeper formats. So Paul Goldschmidt is a guy that I definitely am targeting in the first round and early in the first round, my top, you know, 7 or 8 picks. Just a stud, and I do expect the Diamondbacks, at least offensively, to bounce back. You know, with Pollock coming back, you got to expect that David Peralta is going to offer some sort of production better than last season. So, but you know, here's my question with the rest: the infield is, like, we know that Jake Lamb is going to play third base.
Mm-hmm.
How is the rest of the infield, the middle of the infield, going to shake out, in your opinion? You've got Brandon Drury, Chris Owings, Nick Ahmed, Kettle Marte. You know, who's
Bill Gosselin.
Gosselin. I mean, who's going to end up getting the majority of at-bats at shortstop and second base?
Well, you know, if I had to pick, I would say the Drury was going to play second and Owings is going to play short. But like we mentioned before, we like the analytics. The Diamondbacks generally perform better when they are – when they have better defense. And, you know, it's the Welsh loves to make fun of Gerardo Parra, but Gerardo Parra left in 2011, and the last time the Diamondbacks made the playoffs was 2011. So I want to say that Chris Owings is going to be the starting shortstop, and for fantasy, that is what we want in our game. We want Chris Owings to start at short. He offers way more offensive upside than a guy like Nick Ahmed does, but Nick Ahmed is, you know, he's a Gold Glove caliber shortstop. He had the groin injury last year. This is just for this infield. It's going to be a very, very big spring training because we have a new manager, we have a new front office and all that stuff. So it's really who impresses Torrey the most. And, you know, like I said, right now I think it's going to be Drury and Owings, but it could be Ahmed and Gosselin. They could love what they see from Domingo Leyva. You know, the Kettle Marte is in the mix here. He's going to get playing time at short and second, I would guess. So there's just so much to go around in the middle of the infield. We don't really have a great answer right now. And it's one of those things where I want to take Drury because Drury, I think, is – he can play a lot of places defensively. I think second base would be just fine for him, but he might be one of those guys that just is a utility player, bounces all around. You know, luckily there's no Bob Melvin or Bob Melvin disciples on this team, so I'm hoping that we get a solid lineup and it's kind of the same day in and day out, but I'm not convinced of that until we see it, and spring training is just going to be so huge for so many spots on this team this year.
Yeah, I think what you're going to see is that Bob Melvin-esque kind of moving parts kind of team, especially up the middle with Arizona. I mean, you've got to think that they're going to save, you know, somebody to be a defensive replacement for Tomas. That could be a guy like Drury. It could be a guy like Chris Owings, who played a little outfield, though not great defensively, last year. So I'm thinking that this is going to be one of those teams where you're really hoping guys get about 450 to 500 plate appearances per guy at the position. But I don't know who's going to get that. And I think,
right,
I don't know if any one of these four guys that we've been talking about gets to 600 plate appearances next season.
I doubt it. Yeah, I highly doubt it. I mean, you know, just even speaking of injury, probably not. But if, you know, if Owings goes on a cold streak, Nick Ahmed could start for a long time. If Drury isn't handling second, they could just give it to Gosselin or to Owings. So there's just so much yet to be told in this 27 story that we're just not going to know. I don't know. You know, if one's draftable to me, it's Drury, because like you said, he has the flexibility to go from second and then be a defensive replacement in the outfield in the game.
Play third when they want to platoon Lamb, don't want to start him against a lefty.
Yeah, Jake Lamb is awful against lefties, so yeah, he can play third. So yeah, if I had to pick one, it would be Drury and then Owings, but you just can't count anybody out until the decision's made, and we won't know until opening day.
I agree with you in terms of Drury. He's a guy I've really liked, through their minor league system, and really offer kind of sneaky, value in deeper leagues last year with his multi-positional eligibility. The other guy for me that I'm interested in, because he's going to come at such a cheap rate, is Ketel Marte. And it's because he offers a unique skill, which is his speed. So if for some reason he can hit and get into that Diamondbacks lineup, he could be a game changer based on his speed. So he's a guy I'm going to take late in deeper formats.
And we saw what Chase Field can do for a guy trying to transition last year in Gene Segura. And I'm not saying that Ketel Marte is Gene Segura by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I think he's still 23, 24 years old, and he's gonna have to win the job at short or move to second or whatever it is that he gets. This field and this lineup can provide a lot for Ketel Marte. So if he does wind up getting at bats, he's going to be a very good sneaky late round pick. My fear for Ketel Marte is he plays a majority of 2017 in Triple A.
Yeah, that's my fear as well. I mean, he has options to go back down to the minor leagues, which I'm not quite sure some of the other guys in that infield do have minor league options left. I'd have to double check, but he's young. He definitely could use some more AAA seasoning. He's a guy that wasn't consistent with the bat last year at the major league level. So it wouldn't surprise me if he started in AAA. He's definitely more of a reserve pick, especially in like NL only leagues if he doesn't make the opening day roster.
Yeah, and I think most of these guys, Drury still has two options. Looking at it here, Owings has three options. Ahmed has options.
They all have options. So you never know. Maybe a hot spring training from Marte, and he could break camp with a team.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Let's move into the outfield. A.J. Pollock coming back after missing the majority of 2016 because of injuries. Came back to save your season late and then got injured again. So what are your thoughts on A.J. Pollock, who was, before he got injured, a borderline first-round pick last year?
Yeah, I mean, his 2015 was amazing, right? It was he had the 39 stolen bases, the 20 bombs. He looked like a first-round pick, at least middle of the second-round pick. And then a couple days before the season, broke that elbow. And he broke the elbow. I guess what had happened was he already had screws in it, and the screws weren't put in correctly. And then when he went in and broke the screws in half, so they had to remove the screws, put this nasty looking plate in. Didn't I send you a picture of it?
Yeah, it was not pretty.
It did not look like a good time. So he had to go through all that, do the rehab and all this stuff. And I was saying, why the hell would you even bring him back for the end of the year?
I never understand when non-competing teams do this, when they bring back guys at the end of a season to give them, give them work at the end. No, make sure they're 100% healthy. Don't risk, them getting injured again. This is a no-win situation.
He played 12 games and got hurt again.
Yeah.
So while I want to take him high for the upside, how many games are you going to get out of the guy? And if he does come back, where is he going to hit in the order? I think, right now you would say he's the leadoff hitter. But who knows? If Marte has a good spring training, maybe Marte's the leadoff hitter. And maybe Pollock moves back to three so Goldie can hit four. You kind of don't know. I love Pollock. He's got high upside. He'll probably come at a little bit of a discount, but I think when you get closer to the season, like with everybody, people will start salivating at that potential. So I think he'll go higher than he probably should, but I don't know, man. I'm probably going to avoid AJ Pollock in most of my drafts this year.
You know, I'm probably not going to get him in a ton of drafts this season, only because I think there's going to be at least one person in every one of my leagues that, like you said, is salivating at the potential, and it's going to be really hard for me to take him over certain guys. He's currently going as a sixth overall outfielder off the board on in NFBC drafts, going ahead of George Springer, going ahead of Stanton, going ahead of Nelson Cruz, Ryan Braun, J.D. Martinez. And I actually don't think
I think I'm taking all those guys over.
I don't know if I am.
Maybe not Stanton.
And for me, like, as much as I've loved Springer in the past, I've mentioned, you know, what is Springer now? I mean, he offers very little to no speed at this point. So, I mean, is he really, you know, if I knew that Springer was going to start running, I'd take Springer in a heartbeat. But I think I would take Pollock. I think Nelson Cruz is the guy for me that I'm looking at.
I like, you know, Nelson Cruz is fine, and he hits bombs and he DHs, so you have very little risk for injury. I mean, I like Pollock because of the power speed combo, but yeah, I like guys that stay on the field.
Yeah,
and I've always been like that, so I'm gonna have a hard time taking him. I love the dude. I hope he plays 162 games, you know, and I hope he hits at the top of the lineup and he steals bases for everybody. I'm not trustworthy of him. I mean, are you taking Cargo over him, right? Yeah, I can't believe he's six overall in outfield.
Yeah. That's very surprising. 33rd overall among all players, sixth outfielder off the board. I mean, this may change wildly. It's the first release of their ADPs. But, I mean, to me, that is saying that the guys who play in these leagues and these guys, you know, especially who
the smart draft, guys.
Yeah, they're typically people who are willing to shell out a lot of money for leagues. And if they're playing this, if they're already drafting this early, they're really into it.
Right.
So, I mean, they typically know what they're talking about, know what they're doing. Paul Spohr is one of these guys, you know, does a drafted AFL every year that goes into this this ADP. To me, it seems high, but I understand it. Like, I don't think I could pull the trigger at 33, but I understand other people doing it because he's one of those guys. Like, if he hits, you know, you're getting first round talent in the third round.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. But if he misses, you've just wasted a third round pick.
Yeah, and you can't afford to absorb very, very many other hits.
Yeah, like, he played 137 games, and in 2015 he played 157 games. 2014 he played 75. At the big league level. Last year, he played 12. Mm-hmm. So it looks like it's the other year, you know, but how much are you putting into that crap? I mean, that doesn't work at all. Yeah, it's just, that is worthless, absolutely worthless.
I mean, as a Giants fan, I really buy into this every other year kind of
thing. Yeah, of course you do. Right.
But, I mean, I, as a fantasy baseball analyst, I definitely don't buy into any of that. I think for me, he's a guy that I'm going to be rooting for as a player. But as a fantasy owner, I'm going to let someone else take the risk most of the time.
Yeah, I'm not doing it. Like I understand the appeal, and I'm a Diamondbacks fan. I love watching AJ Pollock. He's a great player. He's intense, and that's kind of why they brought him back, I think, is he wanted to come back more than anything. But dude's always hurt. I'm not investing a third round pick in him. It won't happen for me.
Yeah. Speaking of a guy that is hurt fairly often, David Peralta, you know, only played 48 games last year, didn't even register 200 plate appearances, wasn't amazing when he was out there anyways. Is Peralta a guy that you would be willing to take a shot on? Because he's going at a much reduced rate on NFBC drafts.
Yeah, I think, you know, this was one of the big problems with the Diamondbacks last year was Jake Lamb came out like gangbusters. David Peralta started out pretty well too, but they both had this wrist hand injury stuff, and these things are brutal, and they sap your power. They really screw everything up for you down the stretch, and that's why, I mean, like, a guy, we kind of skipped over Jake Lamb, but Jake Lamb hit 297 with 21 homers through July 25th, and then after his injury, he hit under 200. That's another kind of thing that happened with David Peralta. He had wrist surgery. He came back at the another guy that they brought back at the end of the year. But I mean, you look at his 2015 numbers: his 17 homers and 9 stolen bases, hitting 312. He's not a 300 hitter. He's probably closer to a 275, 280 hitter, hopefully. But he's got a lot of pop. You know, he's a decent outfielder. He's a decent fourth outfielder to have on your team, a third outfielder if you're in a deep, deep league. But I think for the most part, you can take a risk on him. I mean, he sucks against lefties. This is kind of how it is. You know, he's another Arizona Diamondback outfielder that's better at home, 270 versus 217. But he's definitely worth taking a risk on. And the first half of the season, he hit 259. He had the 4 homers. He's a pretty good outfielder. I'm not, you know, reaching for him by any stretch of the imagination. But he's a pretty good one you can have on your bench.
He's also a guy that's going very cheaply. His ADP on NFBC currently is 279th overall, 68th outfielder off the board. So, I mean, you're looking at a guy who isn't really even being drafted as a top 4 or 5 outfielder in 12-team leagues, maybe as a 4th or 5th guy in 15-team leagues. And I think that's really nice value. And like I said, these ADPs may change drastically, and I think if he shows he's healthy in spring training, he's a guy that could vault up a little bit. But I also think he's a little bit of a forgotten man so far in fantasy circles, because he didn't have like necessarily a flashy tool set, in fantasy wise.
No.
And then losing virtually all, or the majority of 2016, people kind of forget those guys, but he can be a valuable role player on a fantasy team if he comes back healthy and does offer, double digit home runs and a handful of steals with a good triple slash. So he's a guy that I think will end up on a number of my teams as a cheap option as a 4th, 5th outfielder in 15 team formats, and a guy that's is definitely forgotten about right now.
How many teams are you doing this year, by the way? Are you going to do the 38 teams again?
No.
And cut back to 25 only?
I did 17 last year, and I made the decision that was too much, it really stretched me too thin, especially with taking on more responsibilities of Friends of Fantasy Benefits and starting at FanGraphs and all that. So, being a husband and father, too. So
the all important stuff.
Exactly. So I think I'm going to limit it to 12 this year.
Okay. And back to 12. All right, I like it.
At this moment, I've got 9 penciled in, leaving me spots for 2 to 3 more. So, one of the things I had to learn, we're going to talk New Year's resolutions, is like I can't say yes to every single,
right,
invite. And I did last year. Any person in the industry that went, "Hey, I've got a league, you want to get in?" I was like, "Oh yeah, sure, of course, I'd love to do it." And like by the end of the year, I was like, "Oh my god, I don't want any more baseball. I want baseball."
It's a full time job to do ads and drops and starts. So.
Oh, and it cost me some leagues.
I'm sure it did. Yeah, I mean, I had 8 last year, and I wasn't happy about having 8. So I can't imagine having 17. That's just, to me, that's just ridiculous. It's too much. Like I barely could keep up on who I had on what team in my 8 leagues. Is this the one where I have? I mean, fortunately, in all of them, I had Billy Burns and Patrick Corbin, so I didn't win many leagues. But I had Xander Bogaerts in a lot of them too. So,
yeah, no, I had a ton of shares of Garrett Richards. So I feel your pain. my AL Cy Young pick at the beginning of the season went down with Tommy John injury. So, it definitely cost me money. It definitely cost me a little bit of sanity. So definitely cutting back down. Let's jump back though real quick, and because you did mention we skipped over Jake Lamb. Talk about Jake Lamb, because I feel like he is another guy that is being underdrafted so far, at least from the early ADPs. Third base, super deep this year. So yes. I understand, like, you know, maybe for some people, the difference between, you know, the number 13 guy and the number 20 guy isn't huge. But currently, Jake Lamb is the 16th third baseman off the board, 148th, almost 149th overall. What are your thoughts on Lamb for this season?
I like Lamb. You know, he has power. He's he has one hang up, and it's he can't hit lefties. And it's unfortunate, but he can hit the crap out of righties, and most pitchers are righties. So that's nice. I mean, I think this is a guy that can hit, you know, 35 homers somewhere in that area. He hit 29 last year, and half of the season he had that, you know, hand injury that I talked about before. And Torey Lovullo said that he is an everyday player. That's like the only bit of news that we've got out of Torey so far, really. But Jake Lamb is an everyday player, so it's what you like to see. Hopefully he'll get better at hitting lefties. If you have daily lineups, maybe pull him out of those lefty lineups, though. But it's a dude that could put up 100 RBIs, score, you know, 80 runs. He scored 81 last year and hit you 35 bombs. It wouldn't be that surprising. So I think if he's going that late as far as third basemen go, that's fantastic. I really like that.
And, I mean, he did show, you know, in small samples that he has the ability to hit lefties. I mean, in the beginning half of the season, he was much better than in the second half of the season against left-handed pitching. So, and it really spiked in July when he hit 316 versus left-handed pitching. Short samples, it's hard to take, you know, much from that. But I think he's still young, 26 years old. I think he could turn that around if given the opportunity. It sounds like Torey does want to give him give them the opportunity to hit left-handed pitching. But I think his value right now is fantastic. I mean, I love Jake Lamb over guys like Justin Turner, over guys like Nick Castellanos, Ryan Healy. I think he is an underrated asset right now in fantasy and a guy that should be targeted on draft day.
Yeah, he's a guy that could put up Kyle Seager numbers costing a lot less than Kyle Seager.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, and plays, you know, in what should be one of the best lineups in baseball. I know, you know, the Diamondbacks, you know, they were injury prone last year, had some issues, but I really like what the Diamondbacks have if all the pieces stay healthy. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, hitting second or hitting fourth in that lineup could be a real nice boon for Jake Lamb.
Yeah, I'm hoping he hits. I would like to see, you know, whoever hits in front of Goldie is going to have success. But I would like to see him hit behind Goldie and start driving some guys in.
Yeah, right now Roster Resource has him projected to hit second. To me, I think I'd rather see, if Peralta's healthy, see Peralta hit in front of Goldschmidt and Lamb behind Goldschmidt. But like you said, anybody in front of Goldschmidt's probably going to rake quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's hitting there in terms of fantasy, you got to love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I just, you know, like you said, I'd like to see one of these hitters that's not as good as him, that's not as good as Lamb, hit in front of Goldie. But we'll see what, I mean, it's another spring training thing that Torey has to figure out is his lineup and how he wants to mess with it.
Exactly. Let's finish up the outfield, though. Talk about Yasmani Tomas, a guy I've been extremely critical of in the past, for a guy who didn't appear to be in great shape, didn't appear to have, you know, the amazing swing we all thought. Then comes out last year and just crushes the ball early on.
Yeah, he did what we've been trying to do for a while, Justin. He lost a whole bunch of weight in the off season. And trimmed down, and he's just dedicated, you know, and he's a really good hitter, and he's a really good power hitter. The 31 bombs is very surprising because you saw last year, you're like, okay, 273 and 9 homers. Well, we kind of expected him to hit 30 homers right out of the gate and hit around, you know, 220 or 230. But he hit 273, and then the next year he kept it the same, 272, but he added the power with the 31 bombs. The problem with Tomas for me is, if you're looking at from an analytical standpoint, like Hazen is doing with this team, I would not be surprised to see Tomas move to an AL team at some point this year, because he is not beholden to any player on this team at all. And while Tomas has production for the Diamondbacks, he is a terrible, god-awful outfielder. And what the Diamondbacks don't need right now is bad fielding to contribute to not-so-great starting pitching. So I would not be surprised to see Tomas moved at some point this season. And if it, you know, who knows, you know, if he goes to Detroit, that's not Chase Field. You know, if he goes somewhere that's not so hitter friendly, you could see the power dip down a lot. But he probably needs to be playing DH somewhere. But while he's on the Diamondbacks, he's probably going to be hitting behind Goldie, whether right behind him or two spots behind him. We'll see. And he's going to be hitting homers. He's going to be driving in runs. So he should be a decent add this year.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see because, I mean, defensively, he is just atrocious.
Really bad.
So, and that's one of the reasons we were talking about earlier with Brandon Drury being a possible defensive replacement for him is because in close games, they're going to pull him out, you know, to protect the lead when they need to. So, you know, he's a guy that I'm not necessarily interested in terms of where he's going this year. I think he's maybe going a tad bit high. I think we saw a little bit of cracks in the armor towards the end of the season. You know, he had a huge power and home run to fly ball spike in August where he was hitting like over 37% home run to fly ball rate. So I think that maybe the power numbers come down a little bit this year. And you want to see him on American League only team or American League team. I just don't know where, you know, where he fits necessarily. And he's got one of those contracts that, you know, started off that's really backloaded. So,
yeah.
You know, he's going to make $10 million dollars in 2018, $15.5 million in 2019, then $17 million in 2020. I don't know how many teams are going to really want the back end of that contract.
That's why he's probably not going to get much back either.
Mm-hmm.
So Diamondback fans are going to be very, very disappointed when he does get moved because we're probably not going to get that much for him. But it's going to be one of those things where, okay, we didn't get a lot for Tomas, but we're going to take his money and spend it in the bullpen or spend it on starting pitching, which is what Diamondbacks actually need.
It would open up a spot for someone, theoretically.
Right, you know, yeah, where the Drury moves back to the outfield and Marte starts and Owings slides over to second or Socrates Brito comes in and plays something.
Speaking of Socrates Brito, what are your thoughts on him? Is he going to make the opening day roster on this team? I was like a real proponent of him late in drafts last season, and of course did not get rewarded at all for that gall. What are your thoughts on Brito? Is there a chance he makes an impact this year?
I mean, he might. To me, Brito is kind of middling. It just, for me, Brito just speaks to the thinness of the Diamondbacks farm system. I mean, he's the best, you know, quote unquote prospect that they have, and I don't know. He's an okay guy. I think if you're an NL only, he's worth a look, but not much in anything else. Because even if Brito plays, he's probably going to hit seven or eight.
Okay, I think that's fair. You know, for me, it was the speed. You know, seeing some of the speed scores and stolen bases throughout his minor league career, that I was like, oh man, if he could just get a full time role in this Diamondbacks offense, he could steal 30 bases. I don't know if that's going to happen at any point in his career. The awful walk rate really holds him back quite a bit. So, I mean, he's a guy that maybe an NL only use a reserve pick on him.
Yeah.
Outside of that, yeah, I just can't see where he is viable to be drafted in really any mixed league format.
Right. I mean, he played in 18 games last year and only had one swipe. So, you know, how does that translate? Normally, I have no idea if he's getting consistent playing time. They only pinch ran him twice. So I just don't know. It's another one of those, you know, if Torrey comes out and starts talking about how much he loves Brito and his speed, then, you know, your interest is going to be piqued. But if he's just kind of a middling fourth outfielder who doesn't pinch run a lot, or they want to send him back down to AAA to get him more at bats, then he's really nothing to you.
Let's before we move on to pitching, because I think you just brought up a really interesting point. The last few years, the Diamondbacks have been a team that has really pushed it on the base paths, and it's really helped their value from fantasy aspect. Any thoughts this year that could continue, or do you really have no idea until we kind of see what what Torrey's going to do on the field.
You would think that, you know, that's one of those few things on this team that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know what I mean? I think that Goldie's going to continue to get the green light. I think whoever hits at the top of the lineup is probably going to get the green light. We're still talking NL baseball. And I know Torrey is coming over from Boston, and he's more of a, you know, he's more of an AL team, and the team is slanting more towards analytics, and analytics has, you know, less trends to steal. It's too risky in analytics. Most of the time, it's more of a, you know, get two guys on and wait for the bomb, that type of baseball. But I think that they're probably going to run a decent amount, maybe not as much as they used to, maybe. You know, instead of 30 stolen bases, Goldie has 25 or 20, you know, somewhere in that range this year. But I think they're still going to run.
And, I mean, the Red Sox weren't awful, you know, the last few years in terms of stolen bases. But Diamondbacks, man, they've been, I think, top three the last 3 years in team stolen bases. So, I mean, that's hopefully something that will continue. And like you said, they still have the personnel to do it. So. Let's move into our starters real quick and talk about what you guys got going on over there. Zach Greinke was your big free agent purchase. I was on the Zach Greinke train last season. Bit me pretty hard.
It broke down. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Do you believe that he can rebound in Arizona, or is he a lost cause as an elite pitcher?
No, I think he can absolutely rebound. I mean, Zach Greinke is still a great pitcher. You know, last year was tough. Anytime a pitcher has an intercostal injury, it's no good. And it's a lot like with hitters and their wrist injuries and their hand injuries. Like, that's part of the thing I was saying before is anything that could go wrong kind of did go wrong with this team last year. You know, I'm not a giant Chip Hale fan. I like him. He's fine. I don't think he should have been blamed for the problems that this team had, but you know, it was at the end of the day, it was on him, and he lost his job. But I mean, Greinke still had 13 wins in his 26 starts. His strikeouts are going to be fine. His walks are still low. He's going to be fine as long as he's fully recovered. I mean, he still won a Gold Glove. He's going to be fine. I don't know what that means as far as his production in Arizona, but I think, you know, you can expect an ERA around 3.5. He's not going to be the twos or the ones or anything like that. Around 3.5 to 3.25, not 4.37 like he was last year. He's just not going to be that bad again. I think that was too much of adjustment, dealing with new catchers, a new scene, and dealing with an injury. So I think he's going to be okay.
I think he's going to be okay too. I'm not going to project him to get back to, like, you know, a sub-3 kind of ERA type guy. But, you know, his xFIP was better than his ERA last year. I think he got a little bit unlucky with his strand rate. You know, maybe needs to
bad defense too.
Yeah, and I think they can fix a lot of the issues that were around him. And I think bringing in Jeff Mathis, I'm hoping that Jeff Mathis is Zach Greinke's
everyday catcher.
Yeah, his everyday catcher. I really hope that they don't kind of switch back and forth or give him Herman. I think Greinke could definitely use a guy like that. And I think that one thing we don't talk about in fantasy circles enough, and really just sports circles in terms of people's production, is the human element to the game. And Zach Greinke is one of those people that in the past has dealt with mental health issues in terms of social anxiety, and you know, this was a new location for him, you know, and that may have actually had a real effect. You know, we talked about, or you mentioned Gene Segura earlier and having the breakout with you guys.
Yeah.
Well, part of that may have had to do with the fact that he really needed to get out of Milwaukee after what happened with his son.
Very much so. Yeah.
And so for me, I'm not ready to give up on a guy like Zach Greinke because, one, he is brilliant when it comes to baseball. I mean, the dude really gets into the advanced statistics, really, you know, is a guy that really evaluates every aspect of his game. And that just doesn't go away because he had one bad year.
Yeah, we had Eno on before, and Eno talked about how Zach Greinke always, like, lit up when Eno would come in. He'd be like, oh, the stats guy is here. and he would, you know, talk to him about all of his advanced stats and stuff, and he'd be like, "Well, what am I doing wrong?" And he'd be like, "Well, aren't you supposed to tell me that?" Mm-hmm. You know. So he's very interested in all that stuff, and I mean, it shows in his game. I mean, that's probably why he wins the Gold Glove so often. He's always in the right spot, and he knows that because he takes into account what's going to happen and what the purpose of every pitch is and all that stuff. He's out there pitching and not just throwing.
Yeah, and he's definitely a guy for me that will I'm going to go back to the well with. And, I may get burned again, but to me, I'm happy with him, you know, in a 15-team league being my number two pitcher. And I'm actually probably ecstatic about that. Right now he's going 21st off the board in starting pitchers. Ahead of Kenta Maeda, Aaron Sanchez, Danny Duffy, and I'm okay with that.
That's low to me. I'm surprised he's going that low. 21. Yeah.
I mean, there's the guys that are going ahead of him that I think I would take Greinke over. Cole Hamels, easy.
Yes.
I am pretty much done with Steven Strasburg at this point.
Right. Very much so. Yes.
Jacob DeGrom, Carlos Martinez. I think there's an argument to be made for any one of those three going ahead of each other. So for me, it's about like who I can
get later. They're kind of in the same tier. Right.
Yeah. It's who I can get later out of that grouping. I think I have Zach Greinke as my 16th starting pitcher right now, right behind Tanaka, who's actually ranked at 20th according to ADP on NFBC in their ADP right now. So I think there's about four or five guys I would take after, but I think there's a huge cluster right there in that tier. But I think he could
be a discount. Tanaka's a bit of Tanaka's a bit of a ticking time bomb too, right, with the elbow stuff.
You know, so. Isn't every pitcher though?
Yeah, I mean, no, you're
at some point
right.
We have to give Tanaka credit for just going out there and continuing to pitch.
Absolutely. No, I'm with you. I just if I can take a guy that has had his injury and seems to be over it versus a guy that, you know, has had his injury and he's pitching fine now, but we're already talking about his elbow, you know, I think I'd go with Greinke over Tanaka. Plus, I mean, you know, the ballparks aren't doing either one of them favors.
Yeah,
but,
and the division
a little better. Right.
Division definitely hurts Tanaka, but For me, I just give him credit for, you know, having pitched with the injury and continuing.
And apologizing to the fans because he was injured. I mean, just like, what a great person, you know. I mean.
Well, they raise him right in Japan.
Right, yeah. I'd have been, you know, kicking people over. So, get out of my face. I'm trying to eat.
Let's move on to your guys' big acquisition so far this offseason. That's Taijuan Walker. You get in the deal from Seattle, send Gene Segura. I like the trade from your guys' perspective.
Absolutely.
I don't know if I necessarily like the fit. What are your thoughts on Taijuan Walker?
No, you can't like the fit because Walker he gives up a lot of fly balls, and that's not good for a place like Chase Field, but he also strikes out a lot. So it's a decent trade. You know, you're buying low on starting pitcher with high upside in Taijuan Walker, and you're selling high on a shortstop in Gene Segura, who just had his best year that he's ever had. So I like you, I love the trade. I just don't know how well it's going to work out as far as fantasy goes. Taijuan Walker could come in and struggle. He could come in and strike out way more. It's just one of those things that you're going to have to wait and see. So he definitely comes with a lot of upside, but a lot of risk too. So when you're taking a guy like Taijuan Walker, you need to make sure that the rest of your pitchers are sewn up and that maybe you don't take so many risks on the back end after you take him.
I think he's a guy that, you know, I think he may get a little bit underrated coming into drafts this year because I think people are going to be really afraid of the huge jump we saw last year in the home run to fly ball rate. But I think he's also a guy that could offer some sneaky, K progression. He's moving to the National League. He gets to go up against the pitcher spot probably at least two times a game. The ballparks in that division outside of Arizona and Colorado's are really nice to pitch in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absolutely. So maybe he's not a guy you start every time, but you're not drafting him right now as a guy you necessarily have to start every time out. You know, he's not getting that huge inflation rate that we saw at draft tables last year. Right now, he is the 59th pitcher off the board in NFBC leagues, 218th overall, going in the Drew Smyly, James Paxton, Robbie Ray area. To me, I think that's worth the upside because he still has upside.
Yeah, he absolutely does. He's still young. He's only 24 years old. So there's all kinds of improvement that we could see in Taijuan Walker. So I'm excited to see. And he talked about having the bone spurs removed from his foot. He said they took 10 bone spurs
out of his
foot. That's like walking on rocks just constantly. So, you know, if he can smooth out his delivery because he's not, you know, in agony all the time, you could see a big, big move up for this guy. And he came into Seattle as a big, big-time prospect. I mean, this was a can't-miss. We couldn't trade Justin Upton at peak Justin Upton for Taijuan Walker. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't do it. So he's got a ton of upside, but he hasn't come through yet. And, you know, the Mariners just kind of gave up on him, and the Diamondbacks are giving him a whirl. We'll see if it works or not. But like we said, we dealt from an area of strength because of all the infielders that we have. So
I'll be interested to see, I mean, him in spring training. He's a guy I'm going to be watching quite a bit because I want to see how the pitches move.
Don't watch him in spring training, because all I did was watch Patrick Corbin in spring training. And we know how that went. Dumpster fire.
I'm just interested to see how his pitches move in Arizona, you know,
because right.
The dryness, you know, the breaking stuff, if it doesn't break well enough, that could be a real sign for concern for his curveball, especially. So, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, he went from a 13% home run to fly ball rate, which is pretty high in 2015, to a 17.5% home run to fly ball rate in 2016. So he could be in for a lot of pain from home runs in Arizona, if the stuff doesn't look like it's breaking the way it should in that dry heat in Arizona. So definitely a guy I'm going to be watching closely. Because
hopefully they close
there.
The roof for his starts. That's what we want. Panels and roof closed.
Yes. I think he should get that reworked into his contract.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to a guy that I thought would be getting a little bit more buzz, because towards the end of last season, Robbie Ray was on everybody's kind of target list, it sounded like. But so far, he's going 61st overall in NFBC leagues, 237th overall. What are your thoughts on Robbie Ray?
I love Robbie Ray. You know, we've talked about this a bunch of times between both shows, that we're strikeout whores. We love guys that that can K up somebody, and he's going to have a ton of them. The problem is he also gives up a lot of hits, lots of hits. And with a bad defense like the Diamondbacks had last year, that's never going to be good. He also walks a lot. I mean, he's over 3.5 walks per nine. That is not good. So giving up a lot of hits and a lot of walks is going to lead to a lot of runs, and that's what happens. If he can cut down the walks and the hits, this is a primo guy. He strikes out over 11 per nine. And his xFIP, like his advanced stats numbers, are really confusing, because his ERA was 4.9. His xFIP was 3.45. So he had 15 losses last year. It's brutal.
Well, look at his BABIP for his career. Just 2016, 352 BABIP. 2015, 311 BABIP. 2014,
they sting him.
He just gets creamed if the defense behind him is bad.
Yeah, and they sting him. You know, he when he throws the ball flat over the middle, it's flat over the middle. So you just kind of – you don't know what Robbie Ray you're going to get. It's a little Jekyll and Hyde here in his starts. He can either go, you know, 9 and strike out 11, or he can go 3 1/3 and give up 7 runs. So he's still young enough to turn around. He's only 25, just turned 25. So there's plenty of upside there, and that's what you're looking at with a lot of the Diamondbacks staff. And I think that – maybe every one of these guys is going to be drafted. None of these guys are going to be drafted where they should be, I'll say. They're either going to be drafted too high or too low. They're either going to bottom out, or they're going to come way back up and provide you a lot of value.
And I think that is a fair criticism. I like Robbie Ray's potential. but it's all based on team construct when you get to the Robbie Ray point. Because right. if you're at a, you're with a team with a risky kind of ratio, there's no way you can take a Robbie Ray. You've got to go with maybe a guy who's not going to offer the Ks, but offers you some stability in your ratios. But if you've drafted a pitching staff at that point that is really set in your ratios, he's a huge boost to your K potential in Arizona. So, I mean, Robbie Ray is a guy that – he's definitely a guy that I'm interested in, but it's all team dependent based on what I'm going to be – you know, what I need at that point in a draft or an auction. And so, like, he's like one of those guys that you kind of hope just falls so you have the opportunity to take him. But you can't plan your team around him. He's definitely not a guy I would keep in keeper leagues, even deeper keeper leagues, because you need to know what you're going to have with the rest of your team before you can commit to a Robbie Ray.
He's going to be a guy that will get annihilated and dropped, and then someone else will add him off waivers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, someone else will add him immediately because he's got all kinds of upside. But he's probably going to be frustrating. He's still a young pitcher.
For sure. Are you buying in on a Shelby Miller or Patrick Corbin bounce back? Both are going extremely cheap. I mean, we're talking, I think, outside the top 450 picks.
In short, no. If I had to pick one, I would pick Shelby Miller. I don't know what is going on with Patrick Corbin, if they're going to keep him in the rotation, if they're going to put him in the bullpen. That's another spring training decision that is up to Lavolo. So we'll see what happens with him. I think that with Shelby Miller, what we saw last year was it's another team that did this crap with a pitcher. Like, you know, you saw Jake Arrieta take a huge step going from Baltimore to Chicago because they let him throw his cutter. You know, there's something somewhere that says that throwing a cutter leads to Tommy John surgery. But if your pitcher is worthless without his cutter, what difference does it make if he's going to have Tommy John surgery or not? He's already terrible. So let him throw his best pitch. And I think they let him throw his best pitch in his last couple starts, Shelby Miller's last year, and they were pretty solid. They weren't like the rest of his awful, horrible 2016. So if the new staff says, hey, you know what, just go out and throw your game, you know what you're doing, you've done it before, then I think Shelby Miller has a chance to be a giant get this year. But if they kind of, you know, bring him back, or if they let him throw and he still sucks, also wouldn't be surprised because he's so terrible last year, then, you know, he's just kind of a castaway. But if I had to pick one between Corbin and Miller, it would definitely be Miller.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I've never been a Corbin believer, and I was a huge a detractor coming into last season.
Oh, good for you, Justin. Why don't you brag about it?
But sure. I was also a big fan of where Shelby Miller was going in drafts last year. So I got burnt. I got burnt from one of these guys. And the reason I was on the Shelby Miller kind of bandwagon last year was because of the trade, and not because, you know, I mean, obviously nobody liked the trade that Dave Stewart made.
It was awful,
but I felt like Shelby Miller's draft value was getting tied into the trade value, and people were staying away from him because they didn't like what he got traded for, which happens a lot in fantasy.
Well, it's part of that human. It's part of the human part, though. You know, like, Shelby Miller knows so much is on him now since he got traded. You know, that's one of the last things. But I'm taking a look at his game log, and his last two starts, ones that I was talking about, both no earned runs. One 6 innings, one 5 innings. And his last start was 5 innings, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. So not bad, but we don't know what we're going to get from him. You know, and even, like I said, spring training is nice, but Patrick Corbin was mowing MFers down last spring training. All he was doing was striking out 7 and walking none or 1 every single start. He just looked so good. And then you get to the regular season and he just looks so awful. So I think I'm probably avoiding both of these guys. At the very end, I might take a risk on Miller. But
I think Miller for me is an NL-only play. Like, you know, if I can get him, you know, for cheap and NL-only, I'll take the gamble there. But mixed leagues, probably not.
Right. I mean, you could see neither one of these guys start. Yeah. If they're terrible, Braden Shipley right now. Those guys might get a start. Matt Koch started at the end of the year. There's all kinds of Anthony Banda is a big time prospect for the Diamondbacks. So there's all kinds of guys that can come in and play if these guys aren't going. Even Zach Godley,
mm-hmm.
who just comes up and gets a start every once in a while for who knows what reason. But
yeah, I think that's a really good point. Is they've got enough in their minor league system that they don't necessarily need both or either of these guys to pan out. They've got arms that are ready now.
Right. As long as Greinke, Walker, and Ray are okay, then Miller and Corbin don't really have to be the guys. As long as they're just all right, then they'll be fine. But I would not be surprised to see Bradley back in here.
All right, let's finish up with the bullpen real quick. Talk about Fernando Rodney.
Avoid it.
Is that what you're doing this year?
Avoid it.
Avoiding the whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, the bullpen is terrible, you know, and I make no qualms about that. Fernando Rodney was a big signing. He's going to close games, sure. But Fernando Rodney was added because he's cheap. And he can be traded to a contender for some minor league prospect at the trade deadline. Or he can be the closer if this team is any good this year. One of the two. So I'm not a Fernando Rodney fan, and never have been, mainly because of his hat tip. It just really aggravates me. It has nothing to do with him as a person or a baseball player. I don't care about the bow and arrow. None of that. I hate the hat. Really, the hat is the whole thing. But, I mean, he's almost 40 years old. He's a guy that's going to be pitching in Arizona. He could get absolutely destroyed. And behind him, there's really just only young guys. It's Jake Barrett. Delgado is the long man. Andrew Chafin. Burgos has gotten a shot. Bracho's gotten a shot before and haven't panned out. I tell you what, the guy they added to the 40-man roster that a lot of people like to talk about, and he gets a lot of buzz because he's got a power arm, is Jimmy Scherfe. So if you're looking at a deep, deep dive as far as a closer goes, Jimmy Scherfe could be the guy for the Diamondbacks at some point this season. But, you know, that's so far out. It's definitely a shot in the dark. But they've been talking about him for a couple years. So
if you were going to put a percentage chance that Fernando Rodney is the closer at the end of the season – for the Diamondbacks, what would you put it at?
50%.
Okay, because I'd go lower than that. I don't think that. I think maybe a 20% chance that he is the closer by end of the season.
I just think if there's nothing they get and they wanna sign him back, then no one else is gonna outtake him. You know, that's just the thing with the Diamondbacks.
I think that's
fair. I mean, maybe Barrett. You know, Barrett has the best chance to close games if Rodney is not the guy there. If he gets hurt or traded or whatever, but. I don't. The bullpen's bad, so that's kind of why I wouldn't care about, you know, trading off Yasmani Tomas for a bucket of baseballs and saving all of his money and spending it on the bullpen.
Yeah, because I just think if the Diamondbacks are for some reason good this year, I think they'll have to bring in more bullpen pieces.
I mean, they have the stuff. They have the stuff to be competitive. The Diamondbacks will hit with anyone, and
if that starting rotation of the top three is good.
Yes.
Then and you just need some bullpen pieces, and you guys are a competing team.
Yeah, and just imagine if Shelby Miller is what they thought they were trading for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Patrick Corbin
can be anything.
If he's just a four, mm-hmm. you know, just don't go out and give up seven runs every game. Just please don't. You know, just go out and give up four a game. That's
eat
fine.
Some innings so you're not killing and taxing your bullpen throughout the season.
That's bad, right?
They have a path to victory. It's just going. They just can't fall into the same pitfalls that they fell into last season with injuries, yeah. with the bullpen not being good, with starting pitching not being good. But if for some reason they are bad, I think. Rodney gets moved pretty easily,
yes.
you know, cheap deal, proven closer, quote unquote. So he's a guy that will end up on another team if they're bad. And I just believe if they are actually competing in the NL West, then maybe they go out and they bring in another guy to close games, move him to a setup role, or at least bring in another kind of proven relief arm that could challenge him at some point if he struggles.
Absolutely, yeah, and I hope that's the way it goes. I hope it's, you know, dealing Chris Owings or Ketel Marte or somebody for bullpen help at the end of the year, because you're right there, instead of, you know, dealing away Fernando Rodney for a triple A catcher or something, or a single A catcher, you know. But that's probably what it's going to be. I mean, Hazen he's got a lot of work to do to rebuild the prospects in this team. So
yeah,
it's going to take a while. I just hope that Paul Goldschmidt's years are not wasted. So
yeah,
at least he can probably go. He just committed to playing the World Baseball Classic.
Oh,
so
God.
Maybe he can bring it home for USA.
Yeah, whenever a player on my team, or even just my fantasy teams, like in Keeper Dynasty Leagues, agrees to play in the World Baseball Classic, I just cringe.
You hate it.
Oh,
you hate
just,
the classic.
I cannot stand it. Like, I think it's great from a marketing standpoint, and it's really cool to watch baseball early.
I'm a total mark. I love it. I'm a rube. I will go out to those games. I'll watch them, wave my dumb American flag, all that stuff. I love it.
I love it too from like a fan perspective, but from like a fantasy player perspective, like I'd be totally fine if no Giants were on the team and none of my fantasy players were on the team. Like, that to me is like the perfect scenario, because I get to watch baseball and root for USA.
I worry about the pitchers more, you know, like sure, anything can happen to a hitter, but you know, I mean, those freak injuries, you get hit on the hand, that happens all the time. It's happened to Goldschmidt before.
Mm-hmm.
That was the year that David Peralta came in and from independent league ball and was playing well for the Diamondbacks. But the pitchers are what I worry about, because nobody needs more miles on their arm. So
that is definitely true. And I just, you know, to me, it's – it just scares me when my guy's playing. Like, other than that, like I'm totally
your guy's playing. It's what I prefer. But if my guy's playing, I don't like it.
Exactly. Like, you know, like Max Scherzer, I'm just, please don't get hurt. Please don't get hurt. I don't want to see, like, you know, like the big names go down because of this, you know, these exhibition games. But that is going to wrap us up. Scott, again, tell people where you can reach on Twitter and where people can find all your guys' stuff at In This League.
It's at Bogman Sports on Twitter and InThisLeague.com for all the stuff. We got all the shows. We got our Patreon army going. We got all kinds of stuff going on for you. So just come and give us a look. Check us out. See if you like us. And, you know, have so much fun. It's all kinds of fun.
Definitely have so much fun. Definitely check them out, because if you do, you will like them. They're extremely entertaining. Some of the best guys in the industry from an analysis and entertainment point of view. So I highly recommend In This League. Thanks again, Scott, for coming on.
Anytime. Appreciate it.
And you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please give us a rate and review for the podcast. It will get you entered in to win something, whether it's a, you know, I think we're going to do T-shirts soon, or maybe it is a listener league invite, things like that. We haven't quite figured out what we're going to do quite yet, but all that stuff will be coming down the pike very, very shortly. So definitely give us a review and help us out. And then check out all our other stuff. Still got football kind of going on, talking playoff football. And basketball, the podcast has picked up and is going on right now. So definitely check out all that stuff and all the ranks. We've got multiple rankers for all the ranks for baseball this year. Lots of articles that'll be going up soon and a ton of podcasts. So I hope you enjoy all of that. So that will wrap us up. For Scott and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.